Real and raw talk about child trafficking, kidnapping, and exploitation. This is Adam Whittington, Unfiltered. If it's about child safety, we're talking about it. And now your host, who has risked his own life rescuing children globally from shocking situations, who has advised governments on how to protect children from international kidnappings, spent months in Lebanon prisons for trying to help children. With 23 years experience in international child kidnappings, trafficking, and exploitation, and the CEO founder of the renowned international child trafficking and exploitation charity, Project Rescue Children, Adam Whittington.
Welcome to Adam Whittington Unfiltered. Today we're talking about a topic that really is not discussed often, and a lot of survivors and people going through paedophile stalking is growing. And they really have nowhere to talk to or turn to for help. So my guest today, who I will keep confidential because it is still ongoing, her story is very horrific. I've only just touched base on it, speaking to her briefly, but I wanted her to share her story unfiltered to educate people, raise awareness, and also to help others who are stuck in the position she was and still is. Welcome to Adam Whittington Unfiltered. If you can just basically start from the start and explain to listeners what's been going on.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for having me. I take this as a really big opportunity to raise awareness. So I appreciate you having me on here. All right. Basically, when I was 17, I moved up to a place a few hours away from my parents and started working at a food restaurant. And basically from my first shift, this man came in and I thought absolutely nothing of it. And I just served him like I would serve anyone. There was nothing in it. One thing in particular that really stood out was he had a little chihuahua underneath his arm that he carried around with him. And I had a chihuahua that time. And I said to the man, I said, oh, I actually have a little chihuahua as well, blah, blah, blah. And it was just like friendly talk. When I was 17, I was very bubbly and very talkative. So I just gave him his food, blah, 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 nothing of it. Basically, just to give you an idea of where we were, our restaurant. So it was in kind of like an open complex, like a plaza where you can walk around. And straight across from us was a health super clinic. And in that super clinic, it actually had a mental health clinic and like lots of like psychiatrists and mental health people in there. I only found this out later on, but that's actually why he was in that super clinic quite a lot. So he used to visit there. So this man claims to have mental health issues as well. Now, I just say that just because this will come important later on. So that was the first day I met him. And then I would notice this was from day one working there. But as like the weeks went on, I would notice he would come in quite frequently, like a pretty frequent customer, and he would be very talkative. I was still very talkative back. Being 17 and naive and in your job when you serve food, you have to have customer service. And actually, when I started working up there, I was actually taking on a manager's role. So to me, it was very important, customer service. And basically, I just worked as normal. He would come in, and then within about, I would say, a month to 2 months, he was coming in sometimes 2 to 3 times a day and maybe once buying food. Now, I didn't really think much of it. I knew he was a little odd. You know, you just kind of get the vibes from people sometimes, but didn't really think too much of it. He would share a lot in those times. Like he would talk about things and I would kind of be in my own world trying to serve customers while he's on the side trying to talk. And a couple of months went on. I actually had no idea he was stalking me in person up until the cleaners of that area, the lady came up to me once and said, you need to be careful. This guy has been watching you. And she was keeping an eye on him. And basically she said she's been watching him, watch me at work, sit across and watching me work for like hours on end. And as soon as she said that, red flags just went up because when I was living up there, I didn't have a license. I was only 17 and I caught public transport everywhere. And this man didn't have a license either. And I remember him saying it was because he had epilepsy that he didn't have a license. And it was just odd because as soon as she said that, I just started thinking. I had saw him in like other shopping centres throughout the city, and the city was about 40-minute train ride from us, I would just be out, and then randomly he would be there and I would just say hello because he was a customer and I recognised him because he came in so frequently. And then it just like hit me and I'm like, oh, I am seeing him a lot around. Basically still didn't think too much of it. I became like aware, but then it got like pretty extreme. At one point, wherever I went on my days off, he was there. And if I wasn't seeing him out and about, I was seeing him at work. He was coming in. He would request only to be served by me. We would have a lineup of people getting food and he would wait for me. Then a couple of months into it, it started getting really weird.
What sort of age was he? Was he in his 20s?
No. So I was 17 and yeah. He at the time would have been 39 or 40. That's 10 years ago. So he's much older now. He was much older. So it wasn't like how young guys can be with young girls. It was strange. It was an older man taking a lot of time to put attention on a young girl. It just started getting really weird. Like he would rock up at the shop. This is when it got really strange. So he had a little bag that you wear around your waist and he would have lollipops in it. And he actually had put love heart stickers on these lollipops. And he would hand them out to me and my staff, which was really odd. We would just be like, oh, thank you. You know, because like while he's coming into the shop, we have other customers. We're just kind of trying to do what we got to do with work. And then he's there on the side trying to hand out lollipops. And then another time he comes in with a pizza, hands it in, and we just said, thank you. You know, kind of, we're all young. We just took it. No one ate it. And he came back a few hours later and told us that he had crushed medication up his Valium and asked, did we feel different after it? And we just took a step back. Anyway, it started getting pretty intense. So he was coming in a couple of times and he knew I was starting to get like a bit distant with him and like I wouldn't say hello out in public. And it got to the point where he would come into the shop front, pretend, and look, I can't say whether he was actually having a panic attack or putting it on, but by looking at him, he was doing it for attention. So he would just be in the shop front while I had customers. And he would start like hyperventilating and like crying and there was no tears. I had to stop what I was doing with the other customers and say, okay, are you all right? Is everything okay? He would say, can you come to your side door so I can just have a hug to calm down? Now, he was doing that quite a lot. It got to the point where I wouldn't serve him anymore and I would get like the other staff to serve him. He would sit there to the staff and he would say, oh, laugh with me. So she thinks that we're laughing and having fun. Really weird things. We were all freaked out by him at this point. Still at this point, I had no idea that he knew as much information as he did about me. While this stalking in person was going on, and it was much more at that point, I didn't know how bad the stalking was. I just thought it was like him harassing me at work. Yeah. He had photos of me at my home. He had photos of me out and about. He would record me out and about. He knew my first name, my last name, my age. Everything about me. He knew all my family. He knew all my friends. He knew all my staff. It started getting like the cyber side of it was when I really put boundaries in with him. So I actually got the owner of the shop. We wrote out a thing and we had to hand it to him saying he's banned from the store because the staff were getting freaked out. The thing where we came to that was he came running into the shop from like across the road, like crossed all the roads, ran over and told me to lean in. And I leant in like to hear what he had to say. And he told me I had an erection last night. And I just took a step back and he said, I haven't had one of them in whatever he said. And I just like being 17, I was disgusted. And I said, get out of the shop. And that's when all like the panic attacks where he was suicidal came into it. He left a suicidal, I don't even know if it was suicidal. It was a note or like a letter basically saying I was in his will in the shop. There was another blonde staff member I had that he was always asking her to hug her as well. He would always ask us for hugs, which was really odd, and that it would help him feel better because he was really anxious. He had really bad mental health and that would help him. And she got really freaked out. So anyway, we had to put in boundaries. So we wrote this thing out basically saying he couldn't come into our shop anymore and he couldn't come into like the surrounding area, the eating area out the front. Now, as soon as we did that, that's when like things turned really cyber because he couldn't come into the shop anymore. So it started with, I think one of the first things was he had put my number down on Gumtree and said I was giving away free puppies and it was the shop phone number. So I was having all these phone calls and I'm like, someone must have got the wrong number. This is a food shop. Then it was my mobile number. Then it was even some of my staff's number, which is just really odd how he even got like the boss who like owned the shop. He even got his number. So I don't know how he had so much access to things, but he did. And then that was like one of the first things I remember. Now, I'm probably a little bit all over the place because we're going back 10 years ago. But after that, it was just things like that many Facebook accounts with my photo. So like he had taken my photo just of my face or whatever off my actual Facebook at that time and like made accounts. And he must have also added a couple of my friends and got photos of me, like when I'm tagged in group photos, and like made accounts of me. And he would send messages out of a fake account of me of like other shops and things and like abusing them.
Your Facebook account was a public page or wasn't it?
So it wasn't public as in, I don't know what Facebook is like now because I haven't had it in so long. But back then you could access quite a few photos. I can't really remember if it was completely open, but like I would just accept anyone. Being 17, anyone added me as a friend, it was all about the amount of followers. So, you know, I would accept anyone anyway, but I also didn't have it fully private. So I know you could see still quite a few of like the cover photos and the profile pictures. But I would say with the amount of information he had about me, he must have actually added me as a friend off a fake account or something. I don't know. But somehow he got a lot of information, but he also got a lot of information from a lot of my staff as well, which was really odd. There's some things still to this day that we don't know how he managed to get. But anyway, long story short, he started doing all this really weird stuff online. I had actually no idea that my pictures, now this was just pictures of my face to start with, because at this point he hadn't hacked into my Facebook account, so he hadn't went through my messages. So to start with, I had a man from, it was like a computer shop not far down, and he used to get food. He was a regular and he came in and he actually printed out, because he said he knew it wasn't me because of my age and it wasn't something I would have done anyway. I was on a sex site with my picture, my face, and I couldn't even deny it was me because when I was 15, I had gotten tattoos and in that photo, those tattoos were in the photo. So it was so me, like I couldn't even say, oh, it's not me because like the tattoos were in the photo. So he knew it was me and he came in with it and he showed it to me and it was a sex site. And basically it was saying the reason this man found it, which was he was must have been on that site himself looking for single women around for sexual encounters. This man who was stalking me had put a profile up with my picture, with my name, my date of birth, my hair color, everything. He even knew where my tattoos were, even the tattoos that I didn't even know he knew I had. He had everything. And some of the things on there was just really, really disturbing, especially being 17.
Can you explain?
Yeah. So he, on this profile that he made for me, it had things that I was interested in. So it was like anal sex, blood play, fist play. It was just like a massive thing of all these things I'm into. It had in detail like my brown eyes, brown hair, my photos, my breast cup size, and what I was looking for in a man. It was really weird because a lot of the things he clicked down that I was looking for was like older men. I can't even remember it. I know it was just like a lot of old men with like young women. And I was just like, that is not me. And he knew it wasn't me. But anyway, he showed me. That was the first thing. So this got me to the thing of, okay, my name's already super unique. I'm going to search my name in Google, see what comes up. I don't think anyone really thinks at 17 to search your name in Google. As soon as I did that, it was just, oh my gosh, the amount of sex sites that were coming up. Sex really? Sites, porn sites, one in particular, which was hell to get taken down, was revengeporn.com or something like that.
I've heard of this one before, revengeporn.
Oh my gosh, that was hell to try and get things taken down off that. At this point, it was only my face photos. Anyway, so I started going to the police and they're like, it's an ex-boyfriend. I'm like, I don't have an ex-boyfriend. And they're like, oh, it's a friend that you've fallen out with. I'm like, I don't have a friend that I've fallen out with. I'm like, no one even knows this much information about me. He knew where my parents lived, the house I come from. He actually had that actual address. Oh gosh, the amount of things he had of me, of my family. My sister's name's very unique as well. So there was things of her. He even made Facebook accounts of some of my family members. And then he made Facebook accounts of my sister's children, who were, I think the youngest was 4 and the others were a couple of years older, which was very strange. Like, we were like, why is he making accounts of even them? So then it got to the point of the stalking where he started pretending to be me as a person. So he started impersonating me. He would send messages to other businesses that were local and saying, blah, 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 I had this encounter, like abusing them. And giving my number, my actual mobile number, which I don't even know how he got. And he would get them to contact me back. So I'd get all these phone calls. And at one point I was getting maybe, I don't even know, 20 to 30 phone calls a day of just randoms. And he would even be on the phone. So he actually does puppetry. So he works with children still to this day. I don't know.
And I'm guessing he has a child safety.
He does. I was told
this
that
is in Australia, obviously. So
actually, this is in Brisbane. So it just shocks me because the amount of friends I have in Brisbane, and he goes into schools and does it, does shows for kids and goes to people's homes and does shows. And he, to this day, I was in the police station not so long ago over something recent. I said to them, I said, how? And the guy I was talking to, he didn't seem concerned. It was like, we don't know. It's the last thing they want to look into, why someone who's been convicted of stalking is still working with children.
So you found the police response to you throughout, even when you first initially reported it, was blasé? I mean, they didn't take it serious?
No. So for the first year, when I was going in and saying, look, this man's doing this man's doing that, they basically said to me, I needed to gather all the things he's doing, keep all the evidence. I said, I don't feel safe in my home. And it got to the point where he had actually emailed my best friend who worked next door to us, the girl I lived with. He emailed the shop, her shop, and he really had a hate for her. Like, when he would create profiles and things, there would always be things about her, like nasty things. And he actually emailed the shop, and it was great that he did it because it came back on his actual email asking if he could bring a gun in for protection because he felt unsafe around her. He had really intense, like, he must have been mentally ill to some degree, because once all this started, he started turning around and saying that I was actually stalking him. Like, he started saying that he was fearing for his life. Anyway, long story short, let's go back a little bit because I'm jumping forward. I'm in the police station. I'm trying to get them to listen to me. They basically said, no, you need to let it go on for a little bit longer, collect as much evidence. We can't charge him with what you have here. Mind you, I'm only 17. I was turning 18 in December, in the end of the year. And
just let it keep going.
And then I was just like, okay, so that's what we did. We collected lots of things. He started leaving gifts at the shop. I was still seeing him everywhere. There was one time in particular I had like a gutful of it. I mean, I could actually sit here and talk for hours on the little things that occurred, because there was things for a solid year every day. And it would be 10 to 20 times a day I was having things happen. It got to the point I was just like really depressed. Yeah, anyway, finally I had some police officers that started taking it a bit serious. So what happened was, we gained enough information for them to charge him, because they found on like some train footage, because we would catch the same train line, or he would always be on it, of me walking out, him following. There was a couple of things, and we gained enough to be like, okay. Now the courts put in a restraining order on him, and it was only valid for 2 years. Anyway, so he got a restraining order and maybe 3 months good behavior for the stalking charges. You know, I went to court and everything, and that went through. Anyway, with my old job, it got so intense with him. He would not listen, that he wasn't allowed there, that I actually had to change jobs. So I was working on the other side of the city, and my train trip was about 50 minutes and it was not in the direction or that area where he lived. One day I'm on the bus going there, and next minute he gets on the bus. Now, this is after the order. I'm sitting on the bus. I call Police Link straight away. And actually, I said to the man as I got on the bus, I said, I have a restraining order out on this man. And basically the guy didn't really believe me. He looked at me and he didn't really know what to do. Anyway, I'm on the bus. The guy who's stalking me is on the bus. I'm on the phone to Police Link. They organize police officers to meet me where the bus like turns around so we can get on the train. So police were apparently there waiting. Anyway, they were. While he was on the bus, he kept looking at me, like staring at me, and I was absolutely in fear, actually. I got off, went to the police straight away. The police went on. He would not get off the bus at all. And I just remember he looked really angry, really like weird. I can't really explain it, but like he was on something. Anyway, the police had ended up getting him off the bus and he just started going ballistic, this guy. It took three of them to actually pin him down on the ground, and he started screaming out that I have a knife in my bag and I'm planning to stab him over and over again. They came over to me, they checked my bag. When they actually checked his bag, he had a knife in there. And my concept of it was that he was following me to my new job and I don't even know. Anyway, he got charged with having the knife. So obviously the police didn't believe the story of whatever he had said.
You're still 17 at this time.
17, yeah. And then it got really intense up there. After that, I was just distraught after that day. I'm telling this story very short. There is so much more cram-packed into this. But basically, we're going to jump ahead to like the cyber side of it. I moved back down to my parents because I was just mentally drained. I mean, I was just completely depressed. I had post-traumatic stress disorder. I was just like a mess. Everywhere I went, I was in fear. I just felt like someone was always watching me. It got way too much that I had to leave my job and leave the place I was at. And I moved back in to be with my parents. Within a week or 2 weeks of being there, my mom comes into my room and I remember it clear as day. She said, "Your Facebook has all your nude photos on it." And I said, "What?" And I quickly tried to get onto it, couldn't get onto it. What had happened, he had actually hacked into it. He had actually went through. So when I was 14, I had sent a boyfriend at the time nude photos. These photos wasn't like really extreme, but they were my breast and bottom half, just a couple of photos. And when I was a teenager, growing up as well, on my Facebook, I had photos on there anyway that were in bikinis, swimmers, short top, short pants. And being a teenager, everyone does it. You don't really think much of it. The photos when I was younger that I had sent, I didn't even remember that I had sent them. It was that long ago. I didn't even know they were in my messages, but this guy went through every single message and had taken them, set them as my profile picture and posted them all on my Facebook, had them as my cover photo. And I just thought, okay, it's only the Facebook. We got like so many people to try and report it, take it down. It didn't get taken down for a long time. You can imagine what people were saying. And I couldn't even deny the photos because my face was in them. Like I couldn't say, "Oh, that's not me." It was obvious it was me. Yeah.
Just that alone would traumatize any 17-year-old girl or boy.
Yeah.
Knowing that the whole world is looking. And this is where I think a lot of teenagers who go through stalking, and not just teenagers as well, also turn to look at suicidal thoughts.
It's a lot to take on. Yeah. The thing that was the hardest going through it all is that the police don't help. You like to think that if you go in and you're fearing for your life, you're going to have the police and they're going to be able to do something. The amount of times I sat down in a police office and heard, "We can't get it down. It's a site from overseas. The best we can do is get in contact with them and ask to have it taken down." Long story short, I thought it was just the Facebook that had all the photos. No, I decided to Google my name again. And that's when the photos were on sex site after sex site. Now, I mean, I'm trying to think, lots of revenge porn sites they were on, lots of just like photo porn sites where you can upload photos. Anyway, the thing is on here, and the thing that was most disturbing as well, there was one, and it was a photo of me that I thought nothing of. I would have been 13 in it, in my bikinis, just at a beach, like laying down, kind of posing. To me, it wasn't sexual. But when I was in the police station, I remember sitting down with someone who was a little bit higher up than a police officer, I think CIB. And he took me through this site that they had actually found. And these men on there, so basically what happens is, and this is how I think Daniel was also getting lots of information in the very beginning. So basically, they get a photo of you. They write as much information as they can, what they know about you. Then all these other men will get on, find as much information and help that person and upload photos and things that they find for that person. So my photos were on there. They had code words as well. They don't use normal like words. Like there's just weird words. I can't even remember them, but I just remember thinking, what does that mean? But like the comments, they were sexual. I remember even once I had fake nails on and they were even sexualizing my nails. And it was a lot about me being young. In the photos, you could see I was very young. I just remember seeing that, and that probably wasn't even the worst. It was one site that I went on, and it let me know how many people had viewed the photo. I remember seeing like not 50, 60, it was thousands in the view thing where it tells you how many people have clicked on that photo. That's the site it was. It was comeonprintedpics.com. I remember it clearly because I remember seeing the thing and I'm just like, oh my gosh, as this was going on, the years were going on. I think I was 18 at that time, but I just remember feeling so violated that my 14, 13 self teenage photos were up here. Men all around the world are on these photos, sharing them, taking them on their phones. Like all you have to do is screenshot now. And I think that's the thing people don't understand. When a photo is out there, once you put that on social media, once someone screenshots it, it's no longer yours. And you have no idea how far that photo will travel.
Thank you. I try and educate followers on this all the time about putting even what you think are appropriate pictures, even like you said, lying on the beach with your bikini, no disgusting behavior, no nothing. A normal picture that most teenage girls take, and it takes seconds to screenshot it and more seconds to go into the dark web. And that's where we deal a lot with these normal pictures like in the bikini that do end up in the dark web. And that's when you get thousands and thousands of followers, people looking at that image. It's usually from being uploaded in the dark web to some pedophile forum. And they basically just all swarm over there and have a look. And as you explain, you get all these viewers, thousands of viewers from you don't even know where. This is what parents and teenagers really need to understand. What you're explaining is real stuff. So that's a good point.
Yeah. And that's just the thing. When I was 14 and I took those photos, I never thought ever in a million years that anyone would ever come across those photos again. I didn't even know they existed because years had passed on. I was 17. Didn't even remember I had done something like that. I mean, yes, I was young, stupid, but didn't have a lot of guidance either. Didn't have really parents that actually had those conversations with me either. So for me, it was kind of me out on my own as a teenager doing whatever. But yeah, that was the consequence of it. I just remember it didn't even stop with there. Like, yes, there was lots of views, but the comments that you read that men write are just disturbing.
Did the police eventually take them all down?
So it actually wasn't the police, no. I'm pretty sure it was only actually about 2-3 years ago they got taken down. So they had been up for a very, very long time. Since all this stalking has happened, I am married, have children. It was very hard for me knowing that my name is so unique. If my children type my name in or anything, they came up again, what am I going to tell my kids? That's what was really hard for me. So I went on, I actually can't remember, is it called Image-Based Abuse Australia? I can't remember. It's like a government site. I was emailing with this lady and she actually managed to get most things taken down. There is still things that this man to this day, most recently May this year, he actually found out our whereabouts now and has on this really strange site. I don't even know what it's called, but it's a really strange site. And he still pretends to impersonate me, have conversations with himself, pretending to be people talking about me. It's really strange. I don't know what goes through his head, but he actually put up my home address. And the only way I actually know all these things is that my name is that unique that when I search it, it brings up everything under that name. And this is the thing, I have spoken to lots of young women, lots of friends, and I'm like, you have no idea. And they have no idea what can actually happen to their photos. Yes, you can have your account on private, you can do whatever, but you can also get hacked as well.
Exactly.
So it's better to not have any photos, even the photos that seem innocent, if they're revealing in any sort of way, don't have them up.
This is the thing, and I think a lot of parents and teenagers think that, well, if it's not a nude photo, it's okay. And that's not the case. A lot of these sickos, pedophiles, and what we see in the dark web are mostly stolen images of pictures that are, in the normal person's eyes, they're appropriate. But to a sicko and pedophiles,
they don't think the same.
Exactly.
Their minds don't work the way ours work. I mean, a lot of those kinds of people, I think, their minds are just different. With this guy, we actually worked out in the end because he actually tried to put out an order against me, which got thrown out. It never went through. And when I was reading through what he had wrote on it, he had claimed that I was in a relationship with this man. Really bizarre things. Yeah, that I tried to bash his dog with a cricket bat, like really bizarre out there things that I was trying to sell him drugs. In the thing he wrote, we were in an intimate relationship and that he had to end it when I became abusive towards him. It was really strange.
Just to remind listeners, this guy is actually working with kids.
Yep. This is still to this day.
Shockingly scary. And he's not alone. There's a lot of people of that nature who are attracted to kids, working with kids. And it's really scary, especially the fact that you've tried everything legal and after 10 years, he's still doing it.
Yeah.
And where is it now? Where is it legally now? Is it just like you can't do anything?
So far, we have had him charged twice. When I was in there, the last lot of charges, I was talking about them. He got 3 months good behavior. That's all he got. And the guy I was actually talking to, he said the actual, when they go to court and they get charged for stalking, it's not big. People rarely go to jail for stalking.
It's crazy, right? Because it's not regarded as a serious crime in the law's eyes or the authority's eyes, but the damage it does to people like yourself. And I've spoken to a couple of people since yourself, and suicidal thoughts have come up, and all this post-traumatic stress, it really affects the victims like yourself, and it goes on for years. It's not just a one-off thing.
No. And the thing is that, yes, mine was in the beginning stalking in person, but when it becomes cyber, that's when you really have no help. It's to the point where police, because there's so much that goes online, kids being kids and, you know, teenagers make accounts. There's just so much online. Police don't pay a lot of attention to things that happen on Facebook. And I mean, if anyone thinks that you're going to go into a police station, you have a stolen photo, you're going to get help. Well, you're not. You're not going to get a lot of help because they hear it, they see about it a lot. They never take it serious.
Well, it's a very difficult thing. I mean, I think it was in 2019, Facebook alone removed 8.5 billion, not million, billion fake accounts. And it's just astronomically really impossible. And police just look at it and say, well, this is going to be a nightmare. Obviously, I worked in the police too, so I know what it's like when somebody comes into the front counter and a lot of police just flag it off or try and brush it off or go away and come back and hopefully it's finished type of thing. Yeah. And that's wrong because young kids like yourself at the time who are going through this now go through absolute nightmares. I mean, what do you think needs to be done as far as obviously tougher laws against stalking?
Well, the first thing is it actually comes down, and I mean, I love my parents. It's nothing against them, but it actually does come down to parenting. A lot of what happened to me could have been prevented by having strict rules, by parents actually being aware what their children are up to. Now, it doesn't have to be in a way where your child can't even breathe without you asking, you know, but I think if I had a little bit more guidance, a little bit more knowledge, someone to actually give me as well the attention I was looking for, like a parent, just I had no knowledge of it. I was that young. I had no one to sit there and tell me, okay, I didn't even know at that point it was a possibility. It never crossed my mind at 17. Now I'm older. I can look back and understand everything. But I think the first thing is parents need to be aware. And another thing is to stop letting teenagers put up revealing photos. What's the worst that's going to happen? Your teenager is going to think that you're a prude. You know, what's the worst that's really going to happen? You know, when they're older, they'll thank you for it. Another thing is as well, is that I think young women need to be aware that all their photos, the amount of things, not just women, men too, it would happen too, but the amount of things people share on social media, all it takes is to be hacked into or someone to start looking into your name and who you are. And with everything that's online, you can gather so much information on someone. And I think people need to think twice. I needed to think twice about what I was putting up. You know, I shouldn't have had where I lived. I think on Facebook, you could have like the town you were from. I had the town I was from. I had my mobile number as well on there. I had my email address. I had just everything. And, you know, I don't know if Facebook is the same, but back then you could do like a status, like your thought. And I would post things all the time. No worries. There was no worries to me that someone would be looking at that and finding out where I am, my information. You know, he just, over the years, he actually gathered so much that he was able to impersonate me, even to how I talk, even to the clothing shops I went into. He used to email them. He like knew everything about me. It was really
on and on. Impersonations. You know, you could end up with large debts because they take that. So identity theft is also
Definitely.
Connection to stalking.
But also, I just wanted to say as well, one site in particular that I was on, I remember it has like I'm looking at a computer screen, so like it has all different women and then like your little section where you can click on that girl. There was thousands of young girls. There was like pages and pages of young girls, and on there, men actually can go on and help each other, men or women, I shouldn't just say men, but they get on and they help each other find information on these girls. Some were very, very young.
All of those girls wouldn't even know they're on there.
They would have no idea in the world that their photos, honestly, I would be surprised, even just your average teenagers that are around, how many of their photos and things would be on some of those sites. Because what seems innocent and what teenagers just post, what they think is normal, it's not innocent to those people that are taking the photos. It's like bait, like they see things sexually, everything is sexual. It doesn't matter the age of the girl, they don't care.
That's exactly right. The points you've brought up are extremely important for anybody listening who is experiencing stalking or is going through that. I think it's important that they reach out and speak out to get help. Obviously, you've explained that the authorities are very blasé with this topic.
They are, yeah.
Which is a big problem again.
But that was 10 years ago in saying that. Like, I don't know. We've grown so much with everything being social and, you know, social media and all our identity is online. I don't know if the laws over that period of time have become a little bit more tougher or if they're taking it more seriously now. I'm sure they would see a lot more of it now. Because people do these days, they do post a lot. And that's why I'm very grateful for what you post and raise awareness to it, because it's real. The things you talk about, they actually happen. And everyone's like, oh, well, it hasn't happened to me. So they don't care about it.
I thank you so much for everything you've talked about, sharing your story. And I pray that this idiot is a kind word, disappears and leaves you alone. I can only thank you for sharing, and hopefully it gives listeners who are experiencing some sort of guidance listening to you and what you've been through and what you're going through. So thank you very much. I mean, you're a strong, amazing woman, and you've grown into somebody. I mean, I'm sure your kids now are going to be very well protected, especially in
Definitely.
The online. Because everything you've brought up is so, so true. And unfortunately, there needs to be a lot more education on it and have parents take it serious. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Take
care.
You've been listening to Adam Whittington Unfiltered. Real and raw talk about child trafficking, kidnapping, and exploitation. To find more information on Adam and discover ways you can learn and help, visit www.adamwhittington.com.